Let's talk about PARP inhibitors and breast cancer. Hope, we talked a little bit about the issue of genomic evaluation, but we also want to talk about some of the key trials and how they really ended up translating into practice. So this is kind of a weird thing we've been observing in the last couple of years. It's really interesting. Now, here's a question to the audience that'll sort of lead into it. So you have a patient with metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, has a germline BRCA mutation. In general, how would you think about using a PARP inhibitor in a patient like that? Would you use it as monotherapy, or would you use it as maintenance after platinum-based chemo? And Hope, the reason I've always been fascinated by this question is, you know, general medical oncologists are seeing all four of you and beyond, and they hear this story in ovarian cancer. They love it, the idea of platinum followed by PARP maintenance. And then we see people talking about doing that in breast cancer, although as far as I can tell, there's no data on it. So let's see here. Yeah, more than half of the audience says platinum. It makes sense, but just no data. Any comment, Hope?
You know, basically you said it all. We have absolutely no data on this area. And I think it is, you know, if you have a patient who presents with a, you know, sort of a lot of visceral disease, we do see really rapid responses with PARP inhibitors, but, you know, and this dramatic improvement in PFS and response, et cetera, but it doesn't last as long. It doesn't see, you know, we don't seem to see as much of the tail in our patients. And, you know, some receive prior platinum, but this is patients who are naive to platinum salts. So, you know, the question of whether or not you could maybe delay the development of resistance by treating a patient until you're, sort of debulking them and then using maintenance is a really fascinating question for us. You know, the combination, for example, of PARP inhibitors with hormone therapy in the BRCA2 carriers who have hormone receptor positive disease. What we're going to see, I think, is data that addresses a little bit of the next question, which is, you know, can you use PARP inhibitors as maintenance in combination with an immunotherapy agent, checkpoint inhibitor? And Keylink 009 is looking at induction with gem-carbo and pembrolizumab and then randomizing to continued chemo pembro versus olaparib pembro. And I think that's a fascinating question that's at least beginning to get to that, but it's all comers with TNBC.
So, but just to clarify, Hope, I'm going to guess you don't use that approach of platinum followed by PARP routinely the way a lot of oncologists do in breast cancer.
I think it depends on the patient and situation. I have used it, and I have given PARP inhibitors with endocrine therapy off-label as well. So I think that, and I, in fact, I have a patient who was supposed to, she has a BRCA1 mutation. She was supposed to have breast cancer, metastatic breast cancer, and ovarian cancer. But after about, you know, 4 months of treating her, they went back and redid all the markers and decided it was really serious ovarian cancer that I had been treating. In our cancer center. And so then I put her on olaparib maintenance, but I was going to put her on it anyway, even with her breast cancer. She's a fascinating patient who actually presented about a year before with dermatomyositis. And every time I gave her chemo, her dermatomyositis flared dramatically as she released all these tumor proteins. And now her dermatomyositis on olaparib is gone. It's unbelievable. She's on the lowest dose of steroids ever. This is just an unbelievable case. And I hope that she acts like your 85-year-old, Ursula.
So, she could, absolutely.
So we'll take a look at one of Hope's cases just to show you a couple more things, but maybe not talk about them, but just, again, really interesting. So when you ask these oncologists, you got a patient. You know, this is a real situation. It's kind of interesting. You have PD-L1 positive triple negative metastatic disease where the option of giving chemo and an IO, you know, atezolizumab nab, for example. So when we present that, and a lot of people go with that because of the survival benefit, you see that that is the most common answer. But interestingly, when they do use a PARP, there you go again, you see the chemo followed by PARP maintenance. When we ask, okay, same situation, patient has a BRCA germline mutation, metastatic triple negative, now they're PD-L1 negative. And interesting, you see either platinum, chemo followed by PARP or PARP. And again, Hope, I know if I asked 25 investigators what they would do, I think their answer would be single agent PARP, but you tell me.
You know, I think that it's, you know, the usual problem of needing the details of the patient, but depending on how extensive their disease was, I would consider giving a chemo induction and then PARP inhibitor maintenance. In fact, I mean, the hardest thing we have to deal with triple negative disease is that you have to be on chemo forever. And we know that if you stop the chemo, and we saw this recently, even with the SWOG trial, looking at, you know, managing the primary tumor, you know, if you took the triple negative patients off their treatment and managed the primary tumor, they actually had a worse outcome. And we've seen that in other randomized trials. So it's very appealing to be able to debulk and then give the PARP inhibitor. However, I think in a patient with, you know, very limited disease, I'd be happy to give the PARP inhibitor up front too, because we don't have any data that the, you know, induction followed by maintenance is a better approach. You certainly get more toxicity with the chemo. So I would say I'm equipoise between the two approaches.
Yeah, so certainly quality of life-wise, you would think it'd be great to avoid chemo. So actually, I didn't realize, because this is actually the same patient that your nurse practitioner presented. We were just talking about it.
And I guess
I'm kind of going back here. So I guess the one thing I noticed that was, we were already talking about it, is how she went back and forth between telazoprib and olaparib, trying to find you know, a dose where she could be comfortable. How did it finally play out there, Hope?
Well, I think, you know, this is really dramatic, because I've given both PARP inhibitors quite a bit. And, you know, this patient started on the talazoparib after her radiation to T7, which wasn't so extensive, and ended up needing 2 units of blood every other week. You know, her hemoglobin would be 6.5, you know, I was 7. It was really very dramatic. And she's a young woman. But she had a phenomenal response. So I changed her to olaparib after dose reducing her quite a bit and still having that problem. And she tolerated the olaparib without any anemia at all, but she had a lot of nausea and vomiting. So then we dose reduced the olaparib, and eventually she actually had progressive disease, and she wanted to try the talazoparib again. She had only moderate anemia with the retry, but, you know, her disease really stayed stable and then progressed again. So she ended up then on alpelisib and continued fulvestrant at the end of this year, and is now, and then progressed through that, tolerated the alpelisib very poorly, and is now on capecitabine and not tolerating that at all either. So, you know, she is a unique and very unfortunate situation, you know, potentially worse because of the chronic diabetes, although it's very well controlled with a demand pump. So
The thing I love about this case, though, is the fact that, you know, you had this terrible problem with anemia and transfusion with talazoparib, and you didn't, you know, everybody, maybe people go, oh yeah, olaparib anemia, olaparib cytopenias, and here she had a problem with talazoparib, didn't have cytopenias with olaparib, but I guess just emphasizes that class effect type of thought. I'm not going to present your HER2 positive case. People can check out the video that you did on that.